What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear: strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Welcome to the Divergent Files podcast.
What if the real history of Peru isn't hiding under the sand, but in the things they won't let us study? Here's a quick story, a real one, something that actually happened, and it starts with a kid. In 2017, a Peruvian police team raided a tiny warehouse outside Nazca. They weren't looking for drugs or weapons. They were looking for bodies, small ones, wrapped in cloth with three fingers and elongated skulls. Inside that warehouse, officers found researchers, real scientists, trying to run tests on remains that didn't match any known species. One officer later told a reporter, "I've been a cop for 25 years. I know what a human body looks like, and that wasn't human." And this is the part that hits harder if you're a parent. One of those scientists said he brought his teenage son to help him with equipment the week before. The kid was the first one who noticed the vertebrae didn't fit together like ours. He asked his dad, "Did these things live down here?" Now imagine trying to answer that. So samples were seized. Access was blocked, the bodies vanished into government custody. No final report ever released, and the dig site sealed for public safety. Now here's where the timeline snaps in half, because this wasn't the first time Peru shut down a discovery. Back in 2003, a US-backed geological team ran ground-penetrating radar under Machu Picchu. Nothing controversial, just mapping. But what they found under the site wasn't dirt or rubble. It was hollow, chambers, cavities, shapes too regular to be natural. And weeks later, Peru froze all excavation permits. No more digging, not at Machu Picchu, not anywhere near it. Every request since then has been denied. One of the geologists on that team said something that always stuck with me. He told a colleague, "We didn't find a ruin, we found a door." And then he never spoke publicly about the project again. So here's the part nobody teaches you in school. Families live right above these mysteries. Kids play soccer on top of sealed chambers. Tourists take selfies 20 feet from a warehouse where a teenager asked his father if a non-human species once lived in the same desert he was standing on. And here's where things get strange. Because today, we're going to dig into the stonework that doesn't match the Inca, the skulls that don't match humanity, the geoglyphs that don't match primitive tools, and the ruins that don't match their own timelines. The question we're chasing isn't what is Peru hiding. It's the question that should have been in the first chapter of every history book. If the Inca didn't build ancient Peru, then who did? And why does someone still not want us looking? This is Divergent Files. The story of Peru doesn't make sense at all, not even a little. And the weirdest part? Everybody pretends it does. So take one look at those stones, those monster blocks stacked like Lego for giants, and you realize real fast, the Inca were good, but they weren't that good. No chisels on earth, carve granite like butter. No empire moves 200-ton boulders uphill in sandals. And no civilization builds with earthquake-proof joints, while the rest of the world is still figuring out how not to die from eating the wrong berry. But the textbooks smile and pat your head like, "Don't worry, kid, the Inca totally did that." Some of these megaliths are older than the cultures they are credited to by thousands of years. Some show high heat exposure, like the rock was softened or molded. Some sit on magnetic hotspots. Some have tool marks that didn't match copper, bronze, iron, or anything humans supposedly had. And every time someone tries to measure, scan, dig, or just breathe too loudly near one of these sites, boom, it's closed, roped off, permit denied. Here's a fun detail professors leave out. The Inca themselves said they didn't build this stuff. They pointed at the ancient walls and said, "Those were here when we arrived." Now imagine moving into a new house, finding a bunker in the basement, and telling everyone, "Yeah, no idea who built that, but we're rolling with it." So what does Peru do? They keep telling you the Inca whipped this together with stone hammers and rope. And if you ask for a demonstration, they smile, change the subject, and point you towards the Lama gift shop. And look, no disrespect to the Inca. They were brilliant. They engineered some of the coolest agricultural terraces on the planet. They built an empire on footpaths. They survived at altitudes that make most of us wheeze walking up the stairs. But they did not and could not build the stuff we're about to dig into. And that's the problem nobody wants to touch. Because the moment you admit the stones don't match the tools, the dates don't match the ruins, and the engineering doesn't match the culture, you're forced to ask the only question Peru has been dodging since the first Spanish chronicler picked up a pen. Maybe the Inca didn't build Peru. Maybe they inherited what someone else left behind. And that's where the real story begins. Here's where Peru's story starts fighting itself. The official timeline looks clean enough on paper. You've got your Norte Chico, your Chavín, your Paracas, your Nazca, your Huari, and finally the Inca at the finish line. It's like someone laid out the civilizations in a nice straight line for a museum brochure and said, "See? Perfect. Nothing to question here." But then you walk out into the Andes and look at the stones. And the stones basically flip that brochure the bird. The Inca built terraces, yes. Roads? Absolutely. Some beautiful temples and walls? Absolutely and totally. But the megaliths? The cyclopean blocks? The stuff that looks like it was carved by someone playing Jenga with mountains? Those things are older. Way older. And the deeper you go, the older they get. Spanish chroniclers knew this. They asked the Inca who built the giant walls at Sacsayhuaman. The Inca shrugged and said, "Those were here when we got here." Imagine conquering an empire, walking into their capital, pointing at a skyscraper and saying, "We did that." And the locals going, "Buddy, that thing was already falling apart before we were born." But we don't teach that part in school. No, no. We delete it under cultural myths because apparently ancient people telling you "we didn't build this" becomes optional once a textbook deal is on the line. Take the foundations beneath the Inca structures. You've got multi-ton blocks cut so clean the seams are basically whispering to each other. Then sitting on top, you've got Inca stonework, still great, but clearly different. Some of these megaliths show weathering patterns that suggest they survived not one, but multiple cataclysms, flooding, earthquakes, uplift events, the kind of geological tantrums that erase entire civilizations. Meanwhile, the Inca structures, much easier to date. But here's where the fight starts. Modern archaeology insists, and I mean insists with a level of confidence usually reserved for cult leaders, that the Inca built pretty much all of it. Everything. End of story. Don't ask questions. Move along. And why? because the alternative blows up the entire timeline they've spent a century polishing. It requires admitting there was a civilization before the Inca that was more advanced in stone engineering. It requires rewriting museums, revising grants, humbling experts, and undoing decades of certainty. And nothing scares an academic more than admitting they don't actually know who their favorite ruins belong to. But that's the thing about Peru. The truth isn't hiding. It's just buried under the version someone needed us to believe. History isn't wrong. It's just edited. Here's the part of Peru that makes even the confident historians clear their throat and suddenly remember they left the oven on. Machu Picchu looks simple enough at first glance. Postcard perfect terraces, nice clean walls, llamas doing llama things. It's the crown jewel of the Inca world, the place every textbook waves around like, see, the Inca were master builders. And they were, just not of all of it. Because the deeper you look, the more Machu Picchu starts acting like two different cities built by two different species with two wildly different toolkits. The top layers, those neat terraces, the stepped fields, the temples with the clean stone lines, yeah, that's the Inca. No problem there. You can see their signature all over it. Smaller stones, smart engineering, clean but human-level craftsmanship. It's good work, solid work. But the foundations underneath? Well, that's where the story snaps in half. Down there, you've got cyclopean blocks, massive stones cut and placed with surgical precision that laughs at bronze chisels. Stones that don't just sit on the mountain, they fuse with it. And here's the truly insane part. Machu Picchu was built across two major fault lines. Not one, two. If you or I tried that, the whole place would slide off the mountain the first time the earth cleared its throat. But those unknown builders used those fault lines like an anchor. Earthquake hits, the blocks shift, absorb the shock, and lock right back into place like nothing happened. The buildings actually get stronger under pressure. The Inca didn't do that. They couldn't do that. Nobody in the region had that level of seismic engineering. Most cultures were still trying to figure out how not to die from altitude sickness, and someone out here was building with the tectonic plates like they were Lego. Now, this is where the story gets even weirder. In 2003, a US-backed geological team brought ground-penetrating radar to Machu Picchu. Nothing shady, just science. Map the subsurface, check for cavities, do your thing. And the radar lit up like Times Square on New Year's. Underneath the city were chambers, cavities, hollow spaces too regular and geometric to be natural. Someone built something under Machu Picchu, before Machu Picchu. You'd think Peru would be excited to dig. A discovery like that could redefine the continent's history. But instead, every permit to excavate was shut down, permanently. Dig requests were denied. Radar scans were restricted. The whole thing went from promising research to absolutely nobody touches this dirt ever again. And here's the part that makes your brain itch. If Machu Picchu was just an Incan royal retreat, why seal off the foundations? Why deny dig permits? Why block radar data? Why pretend those chambers don't exist? It's almost like modern Peru inherited a masterpiece it doesn't understand and would rather pretend the lower half isn't there. You see, because when you stand at Machu Picchu, really stand there, and the fog rolls across the terraces, you can feel it in your bones. There are two cities here, one built by the Inca and one built by someone else. Someone with a different relationship to stone, earthquakes, and maybe even the mountain itself. And that's the part nobody wants to admit. Maybe Machu Picchu wasn't built. Maybe it was rebooted. Mm-hmm. Here's where Peru stops being a history lesson and starts feeling like somebody left the developer console on. Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, Kenco, Moray. These names sound like the part of the menu nobody orders because they're afraid of mispronouncing it. But these sites form what I call the megalithic triangle, a region where the stones do everything except behave like stones. Let's start with Sacsayhuaman. Those outer walls look like God grabbed a handful of boulders the size of SUVs and played Tetris on expert mode. Some of these blocks weigh over 200 tons. That's the weight of a blue whale, sitting perfectly level on a mountaintop. The joints between the stones are so tight, they look welded. Some edges even show vitrification, rock melted like glass, then cooled into place. And if you're asking what kind of ancient blowtorch does that, congratulations, you're already ahead of half the academic field. And before anyone brings up the stone hammer theory, yeah, okay. If you've got stone hammers that can melt granite, let me know. I'll buy 10. Now, slide over to Ollantaytambo. I love this one because the Inca left it unfinished. You can actually see where they stopped, almost mid-sentence, like they ran out of builders or daylight or whatever mystical energy the original architects used. The sun temple blocks there are so big you need an existential crisis just to appreciate the scale. They were quarried miles away, across a river, dragged up a mountain, and placed with precision so clean it makes modern masons question their life choices. But the real mystery isn't the weight, it's the cuts. These stones have smooth internal angles, perfect 90s, weird trapezoids, curves, slots, and beveled edges, all polished like someone had access to a toolkit we still can't replicate with modern power tools. Yet somehow, we're told this was all trial and error. Then there's Kenco, a giant limestone labyrinth with carved channels that run like a plumbing system for giants. One chamber inside shows signs of heat treatment, again, vitrification. And here's the kicker. Kenko's carvings look eerily similar to the sacred sites in Japan. Same styles, same recesses, same what the hell is this even for energy. And finally, Moray. A perfect series of descending circular terraces that create microclimates, literal temperature zones engineered like an ancient biological research lab. Nobody knows how old the underlying structure is, but the precision is off the charts. Some archaeologists say the Inca used it for agriculture. Sure, maybe. But the stonework underneath looks older and more advanced than the terraces we see today. And here's where it all snaps into focus. These sites don't just look similar. They share construction fingerprints that also appear in Egypt's pyramids, the basalt structures in Japan, the Moai platforms of Easter Island, and the pre-temple walls of Lebanon. Same polygonal masonry, same precision joints, same weird melted rock edges. Different continents, different cultures, same building style. You can't hand wave that with coincidence. This is a blueprint, a signature. Someone or something left their mark across the ancient world like they were signing monuments the way artists sign canvases. And that's the part that keeps historians awake at night. Because if Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, Kenco, and Moray match sites half a planet away, then the people who built Peru's megaliths weren't local. They weren't isolated. They were part of a global culture, one that understood stone, energy, vibration, and geology on a level we still pretend didn't exist. These weren't walls. They were signatures.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/Ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Here's where Peru stops being an engineering mystery and turns into a full-blown biological curveball. Because stones can be argued with. DNA? Not so much. In the 1920s, Peruvian archaeologist Julio Tello walked into the Paracas Desert expecting pottery, textiles, maybe a tomb or two. What he found instead made him drop to his knees and rethink human history in real time. He found skulls, hundreds of them. Not deformed, not cradle-boarded, these things were built different, literally. More than 300 elongated skulls were eventually cataloged, and some of them are still the largest cranial remains ever found on Earth. We're talking up to 25% more cranial volume than a normal human. And here's the part that trips up every medical student who's ever studied anatomy. They don't have a sagittal suture. That's the line that runs down the middle of your skull. Every human has it. Every single one except these. Cradle boarding, where a baby's head is bound to a board, changes the shape of a skull, but not the internal structure. It doesn't erase sutures. It doesn't change the position of the foramen magnum, the hole where your spine connects. And it definitely doesn't increase cranial volume by a quarter. And here's where the story jumps from weird to, oh, come on. Because in 2014, a leaked DNA analysis, yes, leaked, not published, showed that several Paracas skull samples contained 56 genetic markers that didn't match known human haplogroups. That scientists speak for, we don't know what this is. Now, most of the academic world responded exactly how you'd expect. Nope, fake, impossible. Doesn't count, pass the coffee. But here's the part they leave out. Those tests were performed by credentialed labs, real scientists, real samples, real chain of custody. But because the results made everybody break out in hives, the whole thing got quietly shoved into the drawer labeled too weird to discuss. And then there's the hair. A ton of these skulls have red or auburn hair embedded in the remains. Red hair. In a region where the native genetic profile does not include red hair. That's not cradle boarding, that's ancestry. Still think it's nothing? Well, take a stroll through Paracas textiles. These ancient woven pieces show strange beings, elongated heads, almond-shaped eyes, and in some cases, three-fingered figures floating above the people. The locals didn't treat these beings like family. They didn't depict them farming or cooking or arguing over land. They're shown descending, hovering, teaching, and watching. The Inca later absorbed some of these stories, and even they didn't blur the lines. They didn't say these beings were their ancestors. They didn't say they came from another tribe. They said they came from above. Some of the Paracas skulls show signs of intentional cranial shaping done after birth, meaning some families were trying to imitate elongated skulls. So think about that. You don't imitate deformity, you imitate status, you imitate power, and you imitate something you want to be associated with. And that tells us the truth the textbooks keep skipping. These beings weren't just present, they were revered. They were culturally central. And they were not the Inca. So when you see archaeologists brush the stuff away like it's a typo in the fossil record, it makes you wonder what they're really afraid of. Because finding one skull like this? Well, that's weird. Finding over 300? That's a lineage. That's a chapter of human history that doesn't fit the shape of our own heads. And here's where the real question lands like a brick. If the Paracas weren't human in the way we define human, then who taught them? Who shaped them? Who did they come from? And why did their bloodline vanish? The Inca didn't call them ancestors. They called them gods. Here's the part of Peru that makes you look up at the sky and wonder who the real audience was. Because the Nazca lines aren't just big. They're not just weird. They break every rule of what ancient people were supposed to be doing with their free time. Picture this. Hundreds of perfectly straight lines, longer than highways, carved across uneven desert terrain. Not flat ground, hills, ravines, slopes. Places where even a modern construction crew would struggle to keep a laser line straight. And yet, the Nazca culture did it with a level of precision that doesn't just feel advanced. It feels guided. Some lines run miles without drifting a single degree. Some cross each other like overlapping runways. And the real kicker? You can't see the full images from the ground at all. Standing right next to them, they look like random scratches in dirt. But lift off the ground and into the air, just a little, and suddenly you see massive monkeys, hummingbirds, spiders, humanoid figures, geometric grids, and shapes that look eerily similar to directional markers. It's as if they were made to be seen from the sky, which is hilarious because, according to the textbooks, nobody in Peru had the ability or the need to get airborne. But maybe someone did. Or someone visiting did. Because these lines make zero sense as ground art. And this is where things start picking up magnetic static, literally. Modern instruments have detected magnetic anomalies along some of the major Nazca lines. Not all of them, just certain ones. The same ones that form long straight corridors. The same ones that meet at hub-like intersections. Some lines are slightly more magnetized than the surrounding desert, which is not something you get from people dragging sticks across the dirt. That kind of anomaly suggests heat, energy, electrical discharge, or exposure to something that left a mark. And then there's the animals. Some of the Nazca geoglyphs depict creatures not native to the region, a monkey species from the Amazon basin, a whale in the middle of the desert, birds not found anywhere near the area. How does a desert culture with no planes, no binoculars, and no long-distance travel carve a perfect outline of an animal they've never seen? And don't tell me it's symbolic. Everything ancient is symbolic when archaeologists don't know the answer. So now let's talk about the part almost nobody mentions. In the early 2000s, a joint research project attempted deep radar mapping under the Nazca Desert. They were looking for foundations, soil disturbances, water channels, anything that could explain how the lines were made so perfectly over varied terrain. The scans worked. They found anomalies beneath several major figures. And then the findings got quietly locked up, classified. You can still find references to the project in academic journals, but the actual radar data? Gone. Sealed. The team lead later said he could no longer comment on the study due to external agreements. That's scientist code for someone told me to shut the heck up. And one more thing that never gets talked about. The desert preserves footprints for a long time. But there are no construction paths around the giant figures. No tracks. No signs of scaffolding. No evidence of large groups moving in coordinated teams. It's almost as if the lines were created in a way that didn't require people marching all over the desert. A method that didn't leave footprints. A method that wasn't manual. Even the Inca, who came thousands of years later, said the lines weren't theirs. They claimed the desert figures were messages sent by beings who traveled the sky. So you have artwork you can only see from above, magnetic charges along certain runways, animals the builders couldn't have known about, radar scans that got buried, and zero physical evidence of on-the-ground construction. At some point, you have to stop asking, how did they make these? And you start asking, who were they talking to? Maybe the Nazca lines weren't art. Maybe they were instructions. Now, this is the part of Peru that feels less like archaeology and more like the opening scene of a classified incident report. Because what happened near Nazca in 2017 wasn't a fringe rumor. It was a real dig with real bodies, real scientists, in a very real government shutdown that followed like a storm. The first mummy they revealed was nicknamed Maria. Small, pale, almost fragile looking. Except for one little detail, she had three fingers on each hand. Not damaged, three long jointed, fully developed fingers with bone structure that didn't match human anatomy. Her skull was elongated too. Maria's elongation went up and back, reshaping the cranium in ways that don't happen through pressure. That's not deformation, that's biology. And then came the others. Tiny bodies, but with vertebrae shaped wrong for primates. Rib counts that didn't match any known classification. Hand bones that were elongated like a climbing species, but nothing on Earth matches that morphotype. The whole find was covered in diatomaceous earth, a natural desiccant made from fossilized algae. It dries, preserves, and protects organic material almost like a primitive mummification medium. It also kills insects and bacteria. Thing is, the layer they were buried in was ancient. No modern hoaxer is hauling hundreds of pounds of fossil algae into a cave to fake something with this much biological detail. And here's the part that still makes pathologists sweat. DNA testing from multiple labs showed that around 30% of the genetic material did not match known human sequences. Normally, that level of genetic anomaly would trigger every research grant in South America. You'd expect full funding, university teams, Nat Geo drooling on the runway. Instead, the opposite happened. The cave where the bodies were found was sealed in 2018, as in filled, blocked, closed, erased. And the samples, gone. Some were transferred to official custody. Some were lost during processing. The rest were unavailable for further analysis, which is government speak for we threw this into a vault and double locked it. But the leak that broke the whole illusion came from inside the Peruvian Ministry of Culture. Internal emails, yes, real ones, surfaced from staff discussing the situation. And the line that made even skeptics choke on their coffee was this: these bodies are not cultural artifacts. That's the Ministry of Culture saying the bodies don't belong to any known human group they oversee. Translation: these weren't Inca, and they weren't in the ministry's jurisdiction. So why confiscate them? Why seal the cave? Why disappear the samples? If it was a hoax, you don't erase the evidence. You debunk it and move on. But they didn't do that. They buried every trace like they were cleaning up a crime scene from a story that never made the news. So you're left with a simple, ugly, unavoidable question. One the government still refuses to answer. If this was nothing, why did someone make sure we never look at it again? Here's the part of Peru that makes the ancient civilization story feel like the kiddie version of whatever was actually going on. Because once you line up the megaliths, the fault lines, the energy readings, and the acoustics, you start realizing something uncomfortable. These places weren't just cities. They functioned. And they functioned together. Start with a map. Plot out Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, Machu Picchu, Moray, Kenco, Pisac, and suddenly the Andes don't look like a mountain range. They look like a motherboard. These sites sit on fault lines that produce telluric currents, natural electric flows created by the pressure and movement of the Earth itself. Most civilizations avoided fault lines like the plague. These builders aimed for them on purpose. Some of the biggest stones in Peru sit directly above these geoelectric hotspots. And that's not oops, that's alignment. And this is where the ground starts acting up. Electromagnetic readings under multiple sites spike higher than surrounding terrain. Some people blame mineral deposits. Fine. But mineral deposits don't follow geometric shapes. They don't match polygonal foundations. And they don't show up exactly where the megaliths are heaviest. It's almost like the stones were pulling energy from the earth. Now let's talk about Morai. Everyone loves calling it an agricultural lab. Cute. Except agriculture doesn't explain why multiple terraces produce acoustic resonance like bowls. Stand at the bottom and your voice doesn't echo, it vibrates. The terraces behave like stacked frequency chambers. Some frequencies amplify, others vanish completely. And that's not farming, that's tuning. Imagine a place engineered to modulate sound waves, whether for ceremony, communication, or something more technical. Some archaeologists measured these frequencies and quietly slipped the results into footnotes, like they were scared of drawing attention. Because admitting Morai has acoustic engineering means admitting someone knew how to manipulate frequencies thousands of years before science invented it. Now, look at the stone niches carved into the walls all over the Sacred Valley. Archaeologists call them ceremonial recesses because when you don't know what something does, you just slap the word ceremonial, like duct tape. But look closely. Some of these niches follow a pattern. Paired indentations, angled recesses, vertical slots. They're not random. They're shaped like housings, like something used to sit inside them. Some researchers have compared them to primitive battery casings. Not because the builders had Duracells, but because the geometry is consistent with containment for something electrical, or maybe energetic. Not a statue, not a vase, something functional. And this is where the timeline hits the Younger Dryas wall. Some of these foundations look pre-cataclysmic, older than 12,000 years, older than the Inca by a mile, older than the earliest Andean cultures. They match a pattern seen in sites around the world that look like they survived a global disaster, while everything on top of them did not. Same building style, same polygonal joints, same seismic precision, same strange energy properties. Coincidence? Sure, and my dog can do taxes. Because once you pull on the thread long enough, you're left with a picture of a civilization, or maybe several, that understood energy in a way we don't. Not electricity the way we know it, something older. Something that drew from the earth itself. Something resilient enough to survive earthquakes, floods, and thousands of years of weather. A grid, not metaphorically, literally. A network of engineered sites designed to move, channel, store, or amplify natural forces. A system that got buried, broken, or rebooted after a global disaster and inherited by cultures who had no idea what the original purpose was. The Inca used these sites like holy places, but the original builders, they might have used them like machines. And that's the part Peru still hasn't explained. Because once you see the connections, fault lines, magnetic spikes, resonance chambers, niche housings, you can't unsee them. Maybe the stones weren't just holding up walls. Maybe they were holding the charge. Here's where Peru stops whispering and starts yelling. Because every time the physical evidence gets too strange, or too advanced, or too old, the academic world shrugs and says, "Relax, it's just mythology." But myths are funny things. They only sound poetic when you've forgotten they used to be someone's eyewitness account. Take Viracocha, the Andean creator god, a pale, bearded figure, very much not a native phenotype, who arrives after a great flood carrying what the Quechua texts call tools of light. Not stone, not wood, light. He walks the Andes teaching people how to rebuild their world, agriculture, architecture, astronomy, like a contractor sent to reboot a crash system. And the moment his job is done, he heads west across the ocean, promising to return. That alone should make historians twitch. But the real problem? Viracocha's story isn't unique. Osiris in Egypt, Oannes in Sumer, Quetzalcoatl in Mesoamerica, Aeneas in the Mediterranean, all pale or shining, all bearded, all arrive after a flood. All bring knowledge instantly, like someone hitting download on civilization. All teach agriculture, math, buildings, and star lore. And all vanish when the reboot is complete. Different continents, different cultures, same teacher. Andean myths say Viracocha had helpers, sons of the sun, beings who could command stone like clay, who shaped mountains, carved canyons, and raised walls no human tools could replicate. Some stories describe them lifting blocks effortlessly or cutting stone with fire. If your instinct is to roll your eyes and say, legend, remember, every culture described these beings the same way. They weren't warlords. They weren't royalty. They weren't spirits. They were builders. And their arrival always follows the same trigger, a cataclysm, a reset, a world knocked to zero that needed engineers, not warriors. Now, pay attention to this part. The Paracas skulls appear suddenly, no evolutionary lead-in. The megalithic style appears suddenly, no developmental stages. Agricultural terraces appear suddenly, fully formed. Astronomical alignments appear suddenly, without a learning period. This wasn't trial and error. This was a handoff. It's the same story from the Dogon tribe in Mali, the ancient Japanese records of the Kappa, the Hopi accounts of the ant people, the Maori tales of sky voyagers. The teachers always show up from somewhere else, do their job, rebuild the world, leave instructions, and disappear. Even the Inca didn't pretend they invented any of it. When the Spanish pressed them about their origins, the Inca said they learned from beings who descended after the Unui Pacha, the water age, the flood. And here's the detail everyone skips when they sanitize these stories for classrooms. The Inca said these beings weren't ancestors. They weren't human. They weren't even gods in the religious sense. They were engineers, creators, restorers, rebuilders of a broken earth. When the Spanish first arrived, the Inca thought they were Viracocha returned, not because the Spanish were divine, but because the description matched perfectly, pale, bearded, arriving from the sea. Imagine having a cultural memory so ancient and so specific that you mistake invaders for the builders of your world. That's how deep the mythology goes. And that's why archaeologists hate this part. Because once you line up the myths with the sites, with the timelines, and with the megaliths, with the stone precision, suddenly the legend starts sounding more like a job description. Maybe Viracocha wasn't a metaphor. Maybe Quetzalcoatl wasn't a symbol. Maybe Osiris wasn't just a story. Maybe they were the same culture, one that survived the last global collapse, spread across the shattered planet, and rebuilt everything humans would later claim as their own. And maybe the myths weren't worship. Maybe they were just manuals.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America, discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Thank you.
The strange part isn't the stones, it's the silence around them. The way every answer comes wrapped in a warning label, like there's a whole room of grown adults terrified you might actually start paying attention. So let's stop here, because before we go any deeper, we need to talk about the thing behind all of it, the filter. The invisible hand that decides what history you get and what history gets locked in a basement nobody visits. Mainstream archaeology doesn't avoid Peru because they're dumb. They avoid it because they're employed. Because you don't get promoted by rewriting human history. You get promoted by protecting it. You want tenure? Do you want grant money? Do you want your name on a textbook? Cool. Then don't rock the boat. Don't rewrite timelines. You stick to safe digs, safe theories, safe conclusions, because the fastest way to end your career is to suggest ancient people knew something we don't. And here's the part nobody talks about. The fringe isn't safe either. Every time a real discovery leaks, it gets buried under a mountain of garbage. Fake skulls, fake mummies, fake alien metals, fake whistleblowers who pop up, say something wild, and vanish like they forgot to pay their internet bill. You know what that is? It's not chaos, it's cover. Because mainstream pretends nothing is strange. Fringe pretends everything is aliens. Neither camp is honest. Neither camp is safe. If you throw 10 lies and one truth, most people will stop believing the truth just to avoid looking gullible. That's the goal. Make everything look ridiculous, make curiosity feel embarrassing. Meanwhile, the real anomalies, the ones with receipts, get pushed into the same bucket as some dude in a basement making papier-mâché alien bones and calling it a revolution. The truth isn't hiding at the top or the bottom. It's hiding somewhere in the middle. The space nobody wants to stand in because you get hit from both sides. Ask a mainstream archaeologist about the Paracas skulls. They'll tell you it's cranial deformation, even though some skulls don't have the seam that makes deformation possible. If you ask a fringe guy about the Nazca mummies, he'll swear it's aliens, but ignore that half the so-called mummies are poorly assembled hoaxes meant to poison the entire conversation. So, why is Peru the battlefield? Why do governments care so much? Because if Peru is real, I mean really real, it tears the floor out from under everything else. It means human civilization didn't start where the textbooks say it did. It means someone before us had tools we can't reverse engineer today. Someone somewhere has access to technology that didn't come from here. And the people who manage those systems would rather you think ancient Peru is a tourist attraction than a crime scene. Because if you found something in those mountains that wasn't human, anything that would rewrite physics, energy, politics, or identity, you think any government on Earth would just publish it? Not a chance. Come on. You think they're going to walk out and say, hey folks, turns out we were the tenants, not the owners. No chance. They would classify it. They would seal it and deny it. Mock anyone who talked about it. And then quietly move the text somewhere with a badge scanner and no windows. And here's the final twist. The lies aren't hiding the truth. They're hiding the questions. Because answers are dangerous, but questions, oh, questions are radioactive. And once you see that filter, once you see who's holding it, the rest of Peru starts to look different. The stones, the myths, the skulls, the skies, all of it. And the next question becomes the one nobody wants to face. What does this say about us? If Peru wasn't built by the Inca, then we're left with the uncomfortable question that history keeps tiptoeing around. Who the heck did? First theory, an advanced pre-Inca civilization around Lake Titicaca. This one actually has teeth. You've got Tiwanaku and Pumapunku, sites with the same megalithic fingerprints you see in Peru. Same stone joints, same tool signatures, same "we definitely didn't carve this with copper" problem. The dating is messy, but some geological evidence suggests these foundations could be many thousands of years older than the mainstream estimates. And the Inca themselves pointed toward Titicaca as the origin of their first people. Now, the counterpoint? We don't have written records. Not one slab, not one tablet. So whoever they were, they didn't leave us a manual. They left us the hardware and bounced. The second theory, post-cataclysm survivors from the Younger Dryas event, and this one has global support, literally. Around 12,900 years ago, something torched the planet. Ice cores show a sudden climate crash. Nanodiamonds appear worldwide, formed in high energy impacts, and civilizations like Göbekli Tepe, pre-dynastic Egypt, and the Andes suddenly explode with engineering as if someone hit restore from backup. The idea here is simple. A group survived the disaster, carried their knowledge up into the Andes, and rebuilt. Now, the counterpoint? If they were so advanced, where's the tech, the metallurgy, the writing, the tools? You don't walk away from a global engineering tradition and forget how to make a shovel. The third theory, a hybrid human, the Paracas lineage. We know the skulls are unique. We know the DNA doesn't match standard human haplogroups. We know they appear suddenly in the archaeological record, and their bodies, elongated, massive cranial volume, different vertebrae, suggests a lineage with different capabilities. Maybe different knowledge, maybe different abilities with energy, stone, and acoustics. Now, the counterpoint? Even if they were different, even if they had an unusual brain structure, we still don't know if they had the numbers, or the infrastructure, or the tools to move 200-ton rocks like pool toys. Biology alone doesn't explain seismic engineering. So let's look at the fourth theory. A lost global seafaring culture. This overlaps with Atlantis, Tartaria, Lemuria, and the Forbidden History greatest hits. It's the idea that long before the Inca, before Egypt, before Sumer, there was a civilization with global navigation, standardized building methods, and knowledge of astronomy and energy. That would explain why Peru, Egypt, Easter Island, Japan, and Greece all share the same impossible stonework. Now, the counterpoint to this one? If they were global, where's the navy? The shipyards? Where are the ports? The written language? Something that big doesn't vanish without leaving a trace somewhere besides stone. Now the fifth theory, time tourists, or a parallel human civilization running a different timeline. And okay, sounds insane, but hear me out. Peru's megaliths show machining techniques we didn't master until the modern era. Perfect interlocking joints, laser straight lines, rock melted, shaped, and refrozen. That looks like modern tech, but way out of place. Some researchers argue these builders weren't ancient. They were future, or non-linear, or operating outside our idea of time. Now, the counterpoint? It's a cool theory, but there's zero receipts, zero documentation, zero reason to believe time travelers would spend their vacation carving granite for fun. The sixth theory, off-world builders, extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, take your pick. Peru has Nazca lines visible only from above. It has beings and textiles descending from the sky. It has skulls that aren't human. It has mummies with non-human bone structures. It has stonework that behaves like someone bent geology. And here's the traditional counterpoint. If someone came from another world, they didn't leave behind a spaceship or a tool or a wrench, which means if they didn't leave the tech, that's weak evidence. Normally, that'd be fair if we lived in a world where governments were honest librarians, but we sure as hell don't. That argument collapses the moment you factor in modern suppression. The US government has openly admitted to crash retrieval programs. We've had sworn testimony about non-human materials. Multiple whistleblowers have described recovered craft, biological entities, and reverse engineering divisions. FOIA dumps show agencies seizing artifacts, shutting down digs, confiscating remains, and reclassifying discoveries into black budget vaults. Peru itself sealed caves, blocked radar scans, and vanished samples, and confiscated entire mummies. And who showed up in multiple Peruvian digs? U.S. contractors, intelligence-linked agencies, defense-adjacent geologists, people who weren't there for culture, they were there for tech. So the real question isn't, why didn't aliens leave behind a spaceship? It's, if they did leave one, who took it? Because the absence of evidence doesn't mean nothing was there. So once you include the possibility that some evidence may have been removed, buried, or classified, the entire landscape of Peru's mysteries changes. But here's the truth nobody wants to say out loud. None of these theories solve the whole picture. Some explain parts. None explain all. A pre-Inca culture explains the age. A global seafaring society explains the similarities. A hybrid lineage explains the biological anomalies. Off-world or interdimensional beings explain the leaps. Time distortion explains the technology. And so the real answer might not be one theory. It might be a stack of them. Because Peru doesn't behave like one civilization. It behaves like a site that was built, rebuilt, patched, inherited, overwritten, retuned, and rebooted over and over across cycles. And maybe the only way all of this fits is if someone not from here kept showing up after every reset. We keep calling them ruins, but what if they were prototypes? After all the stones, the skulls, the lines, the chambers, the myths, after all the silence and the filters and the things that were never meant for public eyes, you're left with something uncomfortable. Something that doesn't fit neatly in a documentary or a textbook, or a YouTube video for that matter. You're left with a feeling. And I'll be honest with you here. I've been to these places. Not once. Not just as a tourist. Not for content. I've stood on the terraces of Machu Picchu in the early morning cold. I've touched the stones at Sacsayhuaman that fit so tight you can't slide a razor blade between them. I've flown over the Nazca lines and watched what the lines looked like from the air. I've walked the Nazca Desert and felt the ground hum under my boots. I've looked at those Paracas skulls with my own two eyes and felt my stomach drop. And there's this moment, every single time, where the wind hits your face and some quiet part of your mind says, this wasn't us. Not this wasn't the Inca. Not this wasn't that culture or this culture. I mean, this wasn't human. Not the way we think of human. It's not a theory. It's not even an argument. It's just a knowing. A bone-deep, soul-level recognition that someone else walked this earth before we did, and they didn't walk blindly. You don't feel small in Peru. You feel watched, not in a creepy way. And here's the part that hits the hardest. If all of this is real, if even half of it is real, then the story we've been telling ourselves about who we are is way too small. Maybe we weren't the first. Maybe we weren't the smartest. Maybe we're the amnesia generation, trying to rebuild a world we never really understood. Because what if the truth isn't that Peru holds ancient secrets? What if the truth is that we're the ones who forgot them? What if those stones are instructions? What if those lines are maps? And if those myths are memories? And what if the reason it all feels familiar is because part of us used to know all of this? Maybe that's why these places haunt us. Not because they're mysterious, but because they're reminders of something older, something we lost. And when you stand there, wind on your face, sunlight hitting stone older than recorded time, you can feel it. Not fear, not awe, something more like a question. The kind you don't answer out loud, the kind you carry with you. And maybe that's the point. Maybe the truth was never meant to be an answer. Maybe it was meant to be an invitation to remember who we truly were and who we still might be.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. Discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Thank you for being here and sticking with this story. I know this was a long one, a beast of an episode, but it needed to be told this way. I'm Ralph, and this is Divergent Files.
What defines Ohio? A place that dares to go first and never looks back. There's no slowing us down. In Ohio, we're powering America. Discovering breakthroughs, driving the future, propelling tomorrow. At Jobs Ohio, our mission is clear. Strengthen job opportunities and empower Ohio's workforce. Ohio, our time is now. See Ohio's momentum at jobsohio.com/ohio's time.
Are you a questioner, a wanderer, or even a bit of a snooper? If so, then you'll feel right at home in Knoxville. We've got miles of trails to wander in our urban wilderness, award-winning eateries to satisfy your culinary cravings, cultural sites to open your mind, and dog-friendly activities that'll have everyone wagging. Knoxville, calling the curious. Learn more at visitknoxville.com.
Spring is sprung, and big savings are in full bloom at Menards. Visit Menards Garden Center for everything you need to get your garden growing. Choose from hundreds of beautiful, colorful flowers, lush trees and shrubs, and everything in between. Menards Garden Center is back in bloom. Stop in today to get your garden on. Check out fresh deals happening now at Menards.
Save